Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Homelessness, the lack of affordable housing, rising evictions, and extremely high rents have become some of the most pressing issues for Northern California residents. A new UCLA study projects that rents will continue to surge, especially for low and middle income people in cities like San Francisco and Sacramento. In recent years, housing and tenants' rights advocates have pushed cities to pass ordinances to protect tenants from evictions and skyrocketing rents. On election day, we saw many cities pass some form of rent control. And then a lot of things have been happening over the last couple of months. Just recently, San Francisco supervisors passed a law to protect renters from fraudulent owner move-in evictions. Last month, voters in Santa Rosa, where rents have skyrocketed, defeated a rent control measure. And then in Mountain View, just two nights ago, the Housing Committee met to determine what kind of profit landlords should be able to seek. Today, we're going to spend the hour talking about the state of tenants' rights in the Bay Area. What do you think are some of the solutions to the skyrocketing rental market? What should cities do to protect renters? If you'd like to join us, if you have a story to share, if you'd like to talk about where you stand on this issue, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also tweet at Your Call Radio or email feedback at yourcallradio.org. Today, we are joined by Darwin Bond Graham, an award-winning staff writer at the East Bay Express. Darwin and his colleague Ali Winston are winners of the 2017 George Polk Award for Local Reporting for their series on the Oakland Police Department sex crime scandal. Hi, Darwin. Welcome back to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I also write about tenants and landlord issues a lot, too.
Yes, and that's why we invited you today. But we wanted to mention that because we wanted to say congratulations. It was really great reporting that you and Ali did.
Oh, thanks.
Thank you. We're also joined by Dean Preston, a tenants' rights attorney and founder of Tenants Together, an organization that defends the rights of California tenants. On September 24th, Tenants Together is organizing a statewide assembly of renters and tenants' rights organizers fighting for housing justice. And Dean joins us in studio. Hi, Dean. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Dean, I want to start off with you. Just paint us a picture of what it looks like out there. I grew up in Sonoma County and was shocked to learn that Santa Rosa has seen some of the highest rent increases across the state. And just last month, Santa Rosa voters rejected a rent control law. It was one of the most, actually the most expensive political campaigns in that city's history. And Petaluma, where I grew up, the rents are, I would never guess that the rents would be so high in a town like Petaluma. So what are you seeing around Northern California? What stands out for you?
What stands out is that no community is immune from the crisis right now. And we're seeing surging rents, which we've been seeing now for years. So really coming out of the foreclosure crisis, when more and more folks were being forced into the rental market, former homeowners really put a lot of pressure on, and then you've had rampant real estate speculation across the Bay Area. So we're seeing communities that used to be affordable communities that are seeing huge rent hikes. We run at Tenants Together a statewide renters' rights hotline, and we get calls regularly about rent increases and evictions. And the rent increase calls, these are not calls about my rent's going up 5% and I'm struggling to pay it. These are calls that, you know, someone who's paying $1,000 rent, who's getting a $500 rent increase. And most working people I know are not getting 50%, 100% increases in their wages. And so how are folks supposed to afford that? So what we're seeing is rent hikes that are the equivalent of evictions for people, and displacement moving further and further away from the high rent markets, such that now communities that used to be affordable are hit with the same pressures. And that's why you're seeing this rising tide of rent control and discussions about rent control in communities all across the Bay Area.
Darwin, what does it look like in the East Bay?
It looks virtually similar. You have these cities where historically there's never been much debate about whether or not to implement rent control or, you know, stronger eviction protections. And now we're actually seeing that in places like Fremont right now is currently considering whether to impose a very weak type of rent system, whereby there would be mediation talks if a tenant doesn't like or can't pay the amount that a landlord is asking them to pay, all the way up to like a strong sort of Santa Monica or Berkeley style rent control system that prevents steep rental price increases. We've seen this battle move to Concord, Union City, I mean, really places where people have never thought that there would be these kinds of pressures on rental prices before.
And in places like San Francisco have strong rent control laws. What about cities that do not have any rent control laws? Dean was just saying that some people who are paying $1,000 a month, for example, find out that their rent is going up by $500 a month, so 50% of their rent. What are you seeing, Darwin, in towns that do not have rent control?
I mean, you see that frequently. You see double-digit rental price increases. But even in cities that do have what we think of as rent control, we will see really big rent increases. Even in Oakland, for example, some tenants are hit with these very steep increases because, they might live in a building that's 2 to 3 units with a owner who claims to live in the building or perhaps does live in the building. Those are exempt from rent control. So you can still see, price spikes in markets like this, and that's exactly what we're seeing here, and that's sort of fueling the displacement of a lot of renters right now.
And Darwin, what are the cities like Berkeley, for example, and Oakland doing to deal with this housing crisis and rent increases?
Yeah, I mean, the Oakland City Council, what they say about it is it's sort of a two-pronged approach for them. One is build. So they're doing whatever they can to spur construction of all types of housing, in the understanding that if you increase the supply of housing, then the prices will drop a bit. But at the same time, they recognize that you have to fix the existing rent control and eviction protections. Just one example there: last November, Oakland voters passed Measure JJ. That put thousands of more units of existing rental housing stock under the just cause eviction protections, and it changed the rent control system in the town in an important way, so that it's no longer entirely the responsibility of the tenant to object to an illegal rent increase. So there's some tracking of it now, and it's more the landlord's responsibility to petition if they want to increase rent above the amount that's permissible. But what tenant attorneys and renters are saying now is that in response to that, they're seeing an increase in these illegal and fraudulent owner move-in evictions, or also owner occupancy exemption filings with the city, where the owners are seeking in these small apartment buildings to get around the stronger eviction protections and rent control that voters implemented last November.
Dean, are you familiar with that one?
Yeah, this was an important change in Oakland. And once you have rent control, that's often the beginning of the battle, because obviously the real estate industry is good at getting around the regulations and in coaching landlords how to do that. And one of the things that was happening regularly in Oakland were that there were these additional increases for things like capital improvements, operating and maintenance, things that in most rent control cities, if the landlord wants to recover money above and beyond regular rent increases from tenants, they have to do a petition to the rent board and get permission for that. So it's regulated. Where in Oakland, there was a very weak process, and most of these, the landlord could just pass through without even going to the rent board. So that was a very significant change. It passed overwhelmingly in Oakland. And it's interesting. I think regionally, there's been more attention paid to the new rent control laws. And obviously, that's a lot of our work and a lot of what folks are excited about. But it's also important to look at how cities with rent control are strengthening those protections to plug up some of these loopholes. You mentioned San Francisco, the owner move-in protections, and as well as Measure JJ in Oakland would be two great examples of that.
Dean, last year you traveled around the city of San Francisco. You went to different neighborhoods to put on these renter boot camps, and maybe it was 2 years ago, and I went to a few of them, and they were just packed. And I remember you saying that part of the problem is that people just don't know their rights.
That's right. There are really two problems. One is that people don't know their rights. And the second is that sometimes even if you know your rights, they're not as strong as they should be because of the power of the real estate industry in California at chipping away at tenant rights. But the first one is very significant because a lot of people, even in cities with protections, simply don't know that they have these protections. And so people will be told by their landlord that they need to move out, be told, I need you out in 30 days, I'm selling the building, or something like that. And they just comply. They just leave. It's often because of, for many reasons, they may feel vulnerable. They may be folks who don't fully understand what's going on. They may be seniors, others who are maybe more at risk for being taken advantage of.
Immigrants.
Immigrants, absolutely.
Especially right now.
Absolutely. And there's a bill right now actually in the legislature to try to protect undocumented immigrants in particular from being harassed out of their homes. That's AB 291. But fundamentally, the first step is that people need to know what their rights are in order to assert those rights. And we always encourage folks to call either our hotline at Tenants Together or your local tenant rights organization, depending what city you're in, and make sure that you know what your rights are before you comply with any kind of demand that you pay more rent or move out of your home.
Dean Preston is a tenants' rights attorney and founder of Tenants Together, an organization that defends the rights of California tenants. And Darwin Bond Graham is an award-winning staff writer at the East Bay Express, where he covers these issues. And you can join us at 866-798-8255. We are seeing massive rent hikes, rising evictions. A brand new UCLA study projects that rents will continue to surge and make it incredibly difficult for low-income and middle-income people in places like San Francisco and Sacramento. Up in Santa Rosa, they saw the highest rent increases across the state, and Santa Rosa voters just voted down a rent control ballot, a rent control proposition on the ballot just recently. So if you have any questions or comments, if you have a story to share, if you'd like to talk about where you stand on these issues, 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Darwin, can you talk a little bit about the rights of people? Are there any community programs or anything that are going on right now in the East Bay to ensure that people know about their rights?
There are, but they're obviously not as well funded as they should be. You know, in Oakland and Berkeley, there's a whole little constellation of nonprofit legal assistance groups that will come in and do pro bono work for tenants who have disputes with their landlords who are being displaced or facing some sort of unsustainable rent increase. But once you get outside of Oakland and Berkeley, those services kind of drop off a little bit. There are fewer nonprofits. Their reach isn't as far out as it could be, because these nonprofits and these are groups like Centro Legal de la Raza or Causa Justa, Just Cause, East Bay Community Law Center. And the resources they have are typically like government grants that pay for the attorneys who then identify the tenants who need help, who may be facing some sort of illegal maneuver by their landlord. But once you get outside of these cities, places like Hayward, parts of San Leandro, unincorporated Alameda County, the South County, or go over the hill into Livermore, San Ramon, there's less reach out there. And there's also just less legal protections for renters. There are programs, but they obviously aren't as well funded and don't extend as far as they could.
Well, we have full lines, so let's go to our first caller, Brian in San Francisco. Hi, Brian. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. Great topic. I just wanted to say I'm a landlord and a tenant, so I may have a kind of unique perspective on this, but I'm going to say something perhaps unpopular. And that is that, tenants commit fraud, too. So,
Brian, are you there? Did we lose Brian? Oh, sorry about that, Brian. I think that may have been our fault. Call us back and we'll put you on first. We did not hang up on you on purpose. Sorry about that. Let's go to Jane in San Francisco. Hi, Jane. Oh, we don't have Jane. Okay, hold on. We're having some phone issues. We'll get back to that in a minute. Dean?
Well, I just wanted to pick up on something that Darwin mentioned about resources in different communities, because he's absolutely right. Like, from community to community, it really varies. So if you're a tenant in San Francisco, there are a handful of organizations that you can just drop in and get same-day counseling and assistance. It's amazing groups like the San Francisco Tenants Union, the Housing Rights Committee of San Francisco. And then there are other communities where absolutely no resources whatsoever. And that the legal resources sometimes are limited to legal services programs that have restrictions, can't serve people of above certain incomes, can't serve undocumented immigrants, and they're very limited. What I would definitely encourage folks, and a plug for our hotline, is one of the things we do is try to direct people to the services that can serve them, to the organizations that can serve them in different communities. So our hotline, it's on our website, tenantstogether.org, and the number is 888-495-8020, and we have counselors. Usually takes us a couple days to get back to folks. Mm-hmm. So if you're right in the middle of an eviction, you should just go to a legal services organization. But if you just want to talk to a counselor, get some advice, and then get connected with a group in your area that can help more, we encourage folks to call our hotline.
And we'll put that
on
our website.
Can I add one more thing on that?
Sure, Darwin.
The laws governing tenancy in California are, you know, they're so fractured from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, and they're so complicated. If there were just a more straightforward and simple set of rights that, you know, renters had, you know, a lot of these nonprofit legal assistance groups would just not be as necessary. And also, if government from like district attorneys to city attorneys would actually prosecute wrongdoing by landlords and tenants, as that caller was about to get into, sometimes tenants commit fraud. But if these things were handled more often by, you know, a law enforcement authority rather than, having tenants and landlords, you know, fight in these sort of arbitration settings, then these things would be unnecessary. And I think the Oakland City Attorney is a good example here of how government can be a little more proactive. Oakland City Attorney Barbara Parker has this community law corps program and some attorneys on her staff now. And they are actually going after landlords who are violating the city's tenant protection ordinance. They file lawsuits in the Superior Court of Alameda County when a landlord is like pushing tenants out of buildings. And they actually have a couple cases that are ongoing right now, which have just been these egregious violations of renters' rights.
Hmm. Well, Darwin, I know we have to let you go, so thank you for joining us, and thanks for your reporting on this.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
That's Darwin Bond-Graham, an award-winning staff writer with the East Bay Express, where he focuses and reports on these issues. We're joined by Dean Preston. He'll be with us for the rest of the hour, a tenants' rights attorney and founder of Tenants Together, an organization that defends the rights of California tenants. And let's hear from Jillian in San Francisco. Hi, Jillian. Welcome to the show. Do we have Jillian?
Well, it's Brian.
Oh, okay.
I'm talking to you right now.
All right.
I called back in.
Hi, sorry about that, Brian. Go ahead.
Hey, no problem. Yeah, so I was saying that it doesn't always need to be adversarial. It's kind of like the Stanford Prison Guard experiment. You divide the same people into two groups, and they become role players, and they lack objectivity. So, for example, if I want to, you know, get a tenant to stop smoking, they say, oh, you just want to kick me out. And that's not the case at all. It's just, no, you can't smoke, you know, and they immediately go to this kind of nuclear option. So my point was tenants commit fraud, too, and it's not prosecuted at all, which amounts to condoning it, which amounts to encouraging it, because we had a tenant that moved out and installed her niece, and she was gone for 10 months without ever coming back. We had a rent board hearing, and she claimed to the judge that she still lived there, even though we had video showing that she had never come back. So she not only persisted in her fraud, she lied to a judge under oath. The consequences were zero. She ended up getting almost a year's worth of reduced rent, which was below $2,000 below market, which is equivalent to stealing over $20,000 from the landlord. with absolutely no consequences. If you go into a corner mart and you steal a pack of cigarettes, you go to jail.
Well, Brian, thank you for calling in. So, Brian, I think he's in San Francisco, but I have heard from other landlords in San Francisco that they have a really hard time dealing with tenants like Brian was just describing. Can you talk about that, Dean?
Well, I think the laws are currently set up where the kind of conduct that Brian's talking about, I don't know the details, obviously, of his case, but the laws are set up where landlords have the power, they continue to have a lot of the power and can do evictions and raise rents where tenants are violating rules. So, I think the difference is a lot of the more abusive conduct that we see and are organizing against done by landlords is actually legal conduct, right? Mm-hmm. So we actually have a system where a landlord in most cities can double someone's rent, right? And there's very little consequence to that if you don't pass a local law. Of course, you can always find anyone who is in a business of any kind, whether they're a landlord or something else, that will find one or two examples of someone they feel has taken advantage of them, but they have recourse. And that's what I would say in Brian's situation. And most of the time, frankly, when I hear stories of landlords talking about the awful tenant situation that they've encountered, when you dig deeper into it, you find that landlord either just didn't go, hire a lawyer or address the issue in the way the law allows them to, and then is later complaining. That doesn't mean that's Brian's situation, but that's often what we find when landlords are complaining that the laws are unfair. It's really often that they just didn't enforce them.
Hmm. All right. Well, thank you for calling in, Brian. Let's go next to Jillian in San Francisco. Hi, Jillian. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I've been a renter, and I'm also a landlord, and I was a very bad business person. I never raised the rent. I let my tenants kind of do what made the property work for them, and finally my tax guy said, you can't afford them anymore, and I'm going to have to pay them nearly $100,000 to have them move so that I can sell the building, so that I can get under this business that is losing money. I feel like the rent control board in Alameda County is very slanted toward renters. Renters have nonprofit organizations that they can call for assistance. I, as a small business owner, I have one building, don't have a high-powered a bunch of lawyers at my disposal. My tenants actually filed an elder abuse restraining order against me, and then they filed a mechanics lien against me for work that they claimed that they did, but they had no receipts.
And Jillian, your building is in Alameda?
Yes.
Do you have any resources for Jillian, Dean?
We don't offer resources to landlords.
Is there an organization that would be able to help her?
I'm not sure if she's in the city or county, but I wouldn't know where to send her. There's a very active community of lawyers that provide assistance to landlords. What I would say, though, is there's a very common misconception, and it sounds like Jillian shares this, that one somehow has to kick out their tenants in order to sell a building. That's absolutely untrue. And there is a market always, especially in the Bay Area, to sell a building that has tenants in it. Certainly in a rent-controlled city, if the tenants are long-term and the rents are lower, then the sale price might be a little bit lower. But most of the folks who are in this situation are longtime property owners who have seen their property go up in value exponentially. They've been barely taxed on that increase in their property value, and they can sell their building with tenants in it. So I think the idea that Jillian needs to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars to tenants to move, she doesn't have to do that at all. She can simply put her building on the market and sell it with tenants in it.
All right. Well, Jillian, I hope that helps. And we'll put some links on our website, yourcallradio.org. Today we are talking about the increase in evictions, extremely high rents, and what's happening throughout Northern California. We're joined by Dean Preston, a tenants' rights attorney and the founder of Tenants Together. And if you have a story to share or if you have a comment on the issue of rent control and what's happening around the Bay Area, we'd love to hear from you. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
There are many ways you can take part in the conversation today on Your Call. You can call us on the telephone, although the lines are filled up pretty much. You can send us an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. You can go to yourcallradio.org, our website. If you'd like to participate by telephone, our toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also tweet us at Your Call Radio.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will talk about Donald Trump's travel ban. We will hear from immigrants about how people have been affected by that ban. And then on Friday, it's our media roundtable. We will be discussing coverage of net neutrality. This is a very important issue, and a number of organizations are raising awareness about net neutrality today, urging people to express their opinions with the FCC. We will talk about how the latest Russia scandal is being covered, and then we'll also talk about Donald Trump's plans for deregulation. That's on Friday. If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about the housing crisis across the Bay Area, the high rents that we are all seeing. There's a new UCLA study projecting that rents will continue to increase, especially for low and middle income people in cities like San Francisco and Sacramento. Today, we're joined by Dean Preston, a tenants' rights attorney and founder of Tenants Together. On September 24th, they're organizing a statewide assembly of renters and tenants' rights organizers fighting for housing justice. And if you'd like to join us, if you have a story to share, if you have an opinion about rent control, what's it like in your area? What changes have you seen? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or tweet us at Your Call Radio. And I wanted to ask you, Dean, since we heard from our last caller, Jillian, about paying out renters in San Francisco, the Chronicle reported that San Francisco will not be allowed to require landlords who go out of the rental business to pay their evicted tenants as much as $50,000 to cover the higher rents that they'll face on the open market. According to the piece, a ruling striking down a city ordinance that would have mandated the payments just became final when the state Supreme Court declined to review it.
That's right. There was a disappointing court decision that dealt specifically with the relocation payments for Ellis Act evictions. So folks in San Francisco are generally familiar with the Ellis Act in a lot of communities in the Bay Area. It's not as well known. It's a state law that is used primarily by real estate speculators to empty entire buildings in order to convert those buildings to something other than rentals. So in San Francisco, usually that's conversion to tenancies in common or condominiums. In other communities, it's different. Like in Los Angeles, a lot of the Ellis Act evictions are for demolitions of buildings, and then they will build condos in place of the rental units. So the Ellis Act allows landlords to quote, get out of the rental business, but it also allows the cities to mitigate the impact of that displacement by requiring the landlord to pay relocation payments to tenants. All cities with rent control require landlords who are using the Ellis Act to pay relocation payments to tenants. And there's been a back and forth battle of how much should those payments be. Mm. So they were in the neighborhood of around $5,000 per person. coming to about, depending on the unit, you know, $15,000, $20,000. And there have been two successive efforts to substantially raise those that David, former supervisor David Campos in San Francisco led. And the courts have struck those down. The most recent one would have been in the neighborhood of $50,000 to tenants. The problem here is that getting $10,000 or $20,000 if you're a San Francisco tenant being evicted from your long-term home does not help you stay in the city and county of San Francisco. It doesn't help you stay anywhere probably within an hour of the community that you're in. So these relocation payments, although landlords don't like the big numbers, the reality is if the goal is to help folks stay in their community and transition to new housing, it has to be something more than what's currently there. The courts found that this particular law had gone too far at setting it about $50,000.
And if you don't live in San Francisco, just to give you an idea of how expensive it is here, it's difficult these days to even find a one bedroom for $3,500 a month.
Right. So if you get a $50,000relocation payment and have to move, that is probably going to cover your rent, depending how big your family is, for, you know, a year to 2 years at best.
Right. Well, now I would like to welcome Begad Shaban to join us. Begad is an investigative reporter with NBC Bay Area, and they completed a six-month investigation looking at owner move-in evictions in San Francisco and found that last year, 413 San Francisco renters received owner move-in evictions. That is a 200% spike from 5 years ago. And by law, when this happens, the owner or a family member has to live in the unit for 3 years before renting to someone new. Hi, Begad. Welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, so great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. So you all spent 6 months taking a look at these owner move-in evictions in San Francisco. What did you find?
Well, first, you know, it's interesting because I think anecdotally we just heard from a lot of tenants, many of whom who have been evicted through what's called this owner move-in eviction. And they just said, you know, there just seems to be something wrong with the system because I'm not quite sure that my landlord moved in. So to kind of hit rewind for a second, basically when, as the landlord, as the owner, you have every right to say, you know what, I'm going to ask you to leave my place because I want to move in. Or if I'm already living in the building and I have another unit, I can kick you out because I want a family member to move in. So, and they're totally within their legal right to do that. But what we found out, what we realized, is that when someone does this, so they file paperwork with the rent board, there's actually no checks and balances to check if someone in fact moved in. And just as you guys were talking about, with the rent prices as high as they are, there's a huge financial incentive to kick out someone who's rent controlled in order to find a brand new tenant who in some cases might be willing to pay twice or even three times the amount of rent that the landlord was collecting from that previous tenant under rent control.
You all obtained city records for these evictions and you found new tenants in one of every four units, not the owner or the relative. And I watched the videos that you aired on NBC and a couple stories really stood out for me. One mom who lives with her three kids, she lived in a single family unit for 10 years. She had rent control. I believe it was $1,700 a month. So she got kicked out for an owner move-in eviction. And then you all found out that the owner completely refurbished the unit and then re-rented it for $5,000 a month. Meantime, the single mom has to go to Alameda with only one child because she couldn't find anything affordable. And then two of her children now have to live with their dad. So she got split up from her own children.
Yeah, I mean, this is a situation that literally split a family in half because, you know, if you're, for so many residents in San Francisco, if you're evicted from your home, that's it. That means you can't afford to live in the city. I mean, if you may have been here even just a couple of years, rent prices have just soared so much so than what you may have sort of locked in when you moved here, say 4 or 5 years ago through rent control, is now just a fraction of what you would have to pay in finding a new place right now. And so, yeah, as you mentioned, we basically got the list of every owner move-in eviction. We took a one-year sample, and we went door-to-door for 6 months. And as you might imagine, some people didn't want to talk to us. Some people didn't answer the door. You know, ultimately, we ended up speaking to over 100 people. So we got clear responses from over 100 people, which is about a third or so of the total number of that year. So a fairly large sample size. And what we found is one out of every four appeared to be fraudulent. So, I mean, these were cases where, again, the landlord or owner does not have to submit any proof that they actually intend to move in, or that they have moved in, and that they're not renting to someone brand new. But, you know, as you mentioned in our reporting, we've done a number of stories within this series so far. Unfortunately, we found that time and time again, where the landlord kicked someone out saying they were going to move in, but really it was just to get more money from a brand new tenant. And so actually that spawned a whole series of reform efforts with the San Francisco Board of Supervisors. This actually started a couple of months ago. There have been a number of public hearings on the issue that came really on the heels of our investigation. And actually next week will be the final vote for a piece of legislation that's really going to totally transform the process and really put a lot more safeguards to make sure that this isn't happening, because this obviously is a clear loophole that landlords are taking advantage of. And so what's going to happen now? One of the most interesting parts of this is that if you're a tenant moving into a home where someone was wrongfully evicted, you likely have no idea. You're just a brand new tenant. You're moving in your home. You have no idea who the past tenant was. But the reality is that if you're moving into a home where someone was wrongfully evicted, you're actually entitled to their cheaper rent. So that example you mentioned where there was a group of girls who are now living in apartment that previously was rented by the single mom, she was paying $1,700. Their rent now is $5,000. So they're actually entitled, they can file a simple form with the rent board and petition to actually have their rent rolled back to that $1,700, which is amazing. And it's actually an opportunity that not a single person in San Francisco has taken advantage of. So what we've done on our website at NBCBayArea.com, we've actually mapped out every single owner move-in eviction for the past 3 years. So this is what you need to do. If you find your address on that map and you are A, not the landlord, or B, not their relative, that likely means that you're living in a place where someone was wrongfully evicted if you're not that original tenant. And so you can file a form with the rent board, the San Francisco rent board, and have your rent maybe cut in half in some cases.
Wow. Dean, Bagad just made a really key point here. Renting in San Francisco is really no longer a middle-class option. If you're new to the city or if you get kicked out and you have to find a new place, it's almost impossible.
Well, that's right. And you see that so clearly in certain particular sectors of San Francisco. I mean, the teachers, for example. Mm. The teachers, there's so many vacancies in the San Francisco Unified School District where they can't bring teachers attract teachers from outside San Francisco to come move to San Francisco because you can't afford a market rate apartment on a teacher's salary in San Francisco.
Well, to your point, in Bagad's reporting, they found Nicole DeLisi, a fourth grade teacher who was fraudulently forced out of her San Francisco apartment. She came home to a 60-day eviction notice taped to her door. Back in 2015, she was paying $1,450 a month and was forced to move to the East Bay. And once again, the landlord who kicked her out did not move in as he was supposed to, but he re-rented it.
You know, that's an interesting situation with Nicole, because here is someone who, you know, on paper, looks like she prevailed. She won. She ended up taking her landlord to court, and she was able to collect money. But, you know, she will be the first to tell you that regardless of how much she was able to get from the landlord, this was a nightmare that she doesn't wish on anyone. Because really right now, the only remedy is to, one, play your own private detective and basically find out if your landlord did or did not move in. And then you need to get a lawyer and basically let this run through the court system, which can be an incredibly long, arduous process.
Right.
And so what these reforms now would essentially bring about is that landlords would have to provide some kind of proof that they actually live in the unit, something like an electric bill, voter registration, and they would actually have to sign this letter under penalty of perjury, so that this would actually give the DA's office evidence that they could use in court to prosecute these landlords. They have to sign this letter saying that they do, under penalty of perjury, state that they do, in fact, live in the unit. If not, if for whatever reason they leave, they actually have to offer that unit back to the tenant that they evicted.
Dean, what do you think about that law?
Well, I think this law and any laws are only as good as the enforcement of them. Mm-hmm. And owner move-in evictions are a perfect example of that. There are laws on the books that have been routinely violated. And I think, you know, Bhagat's reporting is really important. And that kind of investigative journalism is unfortunately rare, especially these days and in the area of tenant rights and landlord-tenant relationships. You know, I think that what I would add about the statistics, because everyone was amazed, one in four of these, everyone except for people who have been working with tenants for years, everyone was amazed that one in four were fraudulent. But that's really just the tip of the iceberg, because what that does not account for are all the people where there's never an owner move-in eviction notice even filed. And this is very common. You talk to anyone who counsels tenants in San Francisco or other rent control communities. It's very common that the landlord says to a tenant, I'm moving into your unit, or my son is going to move into your unit. You need to move out. And as we talked about earlier, if tenants don't know their rights, they assume they have to move. And a lot of those are more likely to be the fraudulent ones, because these are landlords who know they should put things in writing and aren't. Mm-hmm. So those are often not real owner move-in evictions, account for a lot of displacement, and aren't even included in this amazing reporting of how many of the filed ones are actually fraudulent.
And I think the enforcement issue is a huge one. I mean, just like you mentioned, there were already certainly a number of seemingly adequate laws on the books that, by and large, I mean, make this practice illegal. But the lack of enforcement, just to give you an example, the DA's office is actually responsible for prosecuting landlords who take advantage of this. And while each of those examples that we found, their attorneys that ended up getting involved ended up forwarding the evidence and really kind of wrapping it with a bow for the DA's office. But we found that in the last decade, the DA's office has not prosecuted a single landlord for abusing this kind of eviction. The DA's office, their argument is that legal precedent actually makes it very difficult to prove, because you actually have to prove intent. It's not just that they didn't live in the home right now, it's that you have to prove that they never intended to live in the home, which can be somewhat difficult from a legal perspective. But to the enforcement end, you know, what I think is really sort of noteworthy about this legislation is that it really puts a lot of the power back to the residents. Because a huge problem is that new residents had no idea what may have happened before they got there. Mm. Well, now a letter is going to be mailed to every home that had an owner move an eviction. And it will let the resident know, hi, this was the site of an owner move-in eviction. Huh. So that means the rent should only be this much for the next 5 years. Just to make sure, you should only be paying this amount. If you're not paying this amount, you're entitled to pay that amount. Contact us. And so all of a sudden, you have a huge financial incentive for tenants to say, wait a minute, I'm paying three times that price. And so now there's a huge disincentive for landlords to take advantage of that opportunity, because now, assuming this legislation goes through, they may likely get caught.
Bhagat, do we know where Mayor Ed Lee stands on this legislation?
Yeah, by all accounts, we've not heard, although we've requested comment from him, we've not heard on how he feels about this legislation. But in speaking with sources at the Board of Supervisors, by all accounts, they don't anticipate any kind of pushback from the mayor's office. So once this second vote goes through, which should actually be next Tuesday, The mayor then has 10 days to veto it or sign it. And then from that point, another 30 days until it goes into effect.
Are you all at NBC Bay Area going to continue covering the rental crisis?
We have. You know, this has been a commitment from us really from the very beginning. I mean, this one particular story is just one of several we've done. I mean, I myself have done a number of stories about home sharing companies and the lawsuit between the city of San Francisco. And I mean, this is certainly something we're going to continue to cover, even with this specific series with the dealing with owner move-in evictions. I mean, we've done maybe five or six stories over the last just couple of months. Yes, this will certainly be something we continue to follow.
Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for your time. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. That's Bhagat Shaban. He's an investigative reporter with NBC Bay Area, and they completed a six-month investigation looking at owner move-in evictions in San Francisco and found that in one of every four units, the owner or the relative was not living in the unit. And as a result, San Francisco supervisors passed a law to protect renters from these fraudulent evictions. Now the question is, will Mayor Ed Lee sign it? We've got just about 10 more minutes, and we're joined in studio today with Dean Preston, tenants' rights attorney and founder of Tenants Together. And you can join us at 866-798-8255. Let's go next to David in San Francisco. Hi, David. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Good morning. This was amazing, the last 10 minutes, because my original call was about something different, but the idea of being pushed out of your home is actually something that happened to me, and that was so interesting, and I've been writing down notes, and I'm going to be checking up on that. But the thing I'm talking about right now, once I had to move out of my place, I became a subtenant at another place, and now the master tenant is trying to get me out, and he just gave me a 30-day notice, and I'm not quite sure how that stands up in law, as opposed to whether I have any rights to stay or not, because obviously I'm not paying the owner, I'm just paying him for my bits. So that's the advice I need.
Well, subtenants do have rights as tenants. They can be more limited in some ways. The important thing to understand is that the master tenant who rents to a subtenant is effectively a landlord with respect to the subtenant. And so that's sometimes news to a lot of master tenants. They think of themselves as the tenant. They're the ones paying rent to the landlord. But they're in that position where they're in between. And they're tenants when it comes to dealing with the owner. And then they are landlords when it comes to dealing with the subtenant. So anyone who's a subtenant who receives an eviction notice, same advice as any other tenant, would be to get into a tenant counseling group in your area, have them review that notice to determine if it complies with local law and state law. But don't assume that you don't have rights just because you're a subtenant.
And David, we have a lot of resources also on the website yourcallradio.org for some counseling if you need that, Dean. The other thing is, it's a very stressful process. I have personal experience with this. You don't know where to turn. You don't know if you're going to have to leave within days, especially if you get one of those 3-day notices to quit. And if you go down to the Tenants' Rights Union on Market Street, I believe it is, the lines are just massive. And it can be overwhelming.
Yeah, so the lines, I think you're probably referring to the Eviction Defense Collaborative.
Eviction, yes.
that used to be on Market Street, which is where people go who have received eviction paperwork in court.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes there can be a wait for those services because they're the one place that serves so many people. But there are tenant counseling places, San Francisco Tenants Union on Cap Street, Housing Rights Committee, San Francisco Causa Justa, others where you can drop in, and often it's not a big wait. And you don't have to wait until you're far in the process where there's already an eviction lawsuit. A lot of that stress you're talking about is the uncertainty early on of never knowing when the shoe's going to drop. And the timelines here are really ruthless. I mean, California, which there's this myth that somehow California is better to tenants than other states. I mean, you look at non-payment of rent, right? And most other debts people have in their life, you get a 30-day notice or more to pay a bill. But somehow with landlords, because of their power in Sacramento, you only have 3 days. And that's actually out of step with lots of other states that have 14-day notices to pay and quit, 30-day notices, right? So in California, the timeline on which you can be evicted is very tight. It's extremely stressful. And that's why we urge folks to reach out for tenant counseling long before you end up actually in a judicial process.
Well, David, good luck. And I hope this advice and these resources help you. Thank you for calling. Let's go next to Eddie, who's calling from the Tenants' Rights Union. Hi, Eddie. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, good show. Thanks a lot for the good information you guys are sharing with us. Eddie with Oakland Tenants Union. Some of the biggest problems are due to ignorance, especially from the landlords, because they should know what the laws are. They don't apply them or they don't know them. But for tenants, if you're in a rent-controlled city or has an eviction law like Oakland, San Francisco, and Berkeley, you should get a copy of the law and find out what it is. And if it's too hard to understand the legalese, Then try to talk to one of these organizations that we've been talking about today, or that's on your website, Rose. So that's really important to really inform us about what the local laws are. The other thing I wanted to say, too, is in state laws, there's a very good pamphlet put out by the Department of Consumer Affairs called Tenants' Rights, and it has a lot of good readable information about what state laws are, because there's state laws that the city laws don't cover, the two sets of laws. So information is the real big thing, and come to us like the Tenants Union and other groups if you're a tenant and you need information about the laws.
All right. So, well, thank you for calling in, Eddie. Eddie's calling from the Oakland Tenants' Rights Union, and we'll put that info on our website. Dean, where do you see this going? Because rents are just continuing to skyrocket all over the Bay Area. Before the show, you said that you're even working with people in Concord. You know, up in Santa Rosa, I said this a couple times, but it was just shocking to learn that Santa Rosa has seen some of the highest rent increases across the state. And just recently, Santa Rosa voters said no to a rent control proposition. It was the most expensive proposition in that city's history. And I've been meeting people who are driving so far to get to the Bay Area because they just can't afford to live here anymore. So where do you see this going?
Well, I don't see the rental prices coming down in a dramatic way that's going to make renting affordable in most communities in California. And right now, looking statewide, the housing wage, for example, is $28 an hour. What that means, the National Low Income Housing Coalition puts out a report every year, and it says, how much do you have to earn hourly to afford the average two-bedroom apartment? In California, it's $28 an hour.
Wow.
So how many professions are people earning $28 an hour? So most people are in California, most renters, are rent burdened. That means they're paying more than what they should be paying. The general guideline is 30% of your income for rent, which is already a lot. But that's what is considered not being rent burdened. Once you go over that, now you're taking money away from the other things that you need money for. So what I see happening is what is already underway, which is a movement at the local level in cities, not just across the Bay Area, but we are working with grassroots organizations in Southern California that will be likely putting rent control on their ballots or at their city councils in 2018. We will see continuing to see rent control be on ballots and before city councils in the Bay Area. And this really has not occurred in decades. Last year, we saw two new rent control laws. You mentioned Richmond and Mountain View. That's the first time in 30 years that any city in California has passed rent control. It's very significant. There is significant momentum. The apartment association and the real estate interests know that. They're trying to figure out how to respond. They're suing in court to invalidate. They're doing everything they can. But grassroots activists are winning and building toward having rent control in more cities and repealing some of the bad state laws like the Ellis Act and the Costa-Hawkins Rental Housing Act that stand in the way of housing security for tenants.
Are Democrats responding to these activists? Because Democrats control a lot of the cities that we're talking about, and they've got a supermajority in Sacramento.
So far, the supermajority of Democrats in Sacramento has been useless for tenants, and Governor Jerry Brown has been useless for tenants. In 6 years, he's not taken the lead on a single measure to protect tenants and is also holding hostage hundreds of millions of dollars of affordable housing money to try to streamline market rate development and make more money for developers. So far, the Democrat Party is not delivering for tenants in California, but we'll keep working on them.
Dean Preston is a tenants' rights attorney and the founder of Tenants Together. And you can find out more information about their September 24th organizing gathering. It's a statewide assembly of renters and tenants' rights organizers fighting for housing justice. Dean, thank you for coming in.
Thanks very much for having me.
Thank you. And thank you. Thanks for your emails and phone calls. You can find resources at yourcallradio.org. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.